flush it and forget it? Maybe that's not such a good idea. When's the last time you took a good look at your septic system? When's the last time you had a little maintenance done? What questions do you have about septic in Wisconsin? It is Septic Smart Week next week, according to our EPA, so we couldn't have a better guest joining us today to answer your questions. Matthew Jansen returns. He's a private on-site wastewater treatment systems plan reviewer with our Wisconsin Department of Safety and Professional Services. I'm Lee Rayburn, and if you have a question for our guest Matt, you are welcome to the show as we take a look at septic systems today and what you need to know. Call us 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And Matt, welcome back.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
Really enjoyed the conversation last year because I don't know how many people actually think about their septic systems. And like you said earlier, flush it and forget it and want to forget it. But you can't really afford to do that, can you?
Well, you know, that's the thing is usually you don't think about septic systems or how they function or what their use is or what you should be putting down the drain until you have a problem.
Yeah.
We discussed a little bit here before we're on the air. You realize it when your basement toilet backs up or you have a wet spot in the yard and your dog rolled in it or something. And then you say, okay, I've got a problem. I have to deal with it. But it's nice to... know a little bit about your system, how it functions, what you should or should not be doing ahead of time to make sure that your system is going to be a flush and forget it kind of system. You don't want to have to be thinking about it's not working.
And so with some basic maintenance, you would have the luxury of being able to flush it and forget it.
Right. I mean, there's some basic things that you should or should not do with the system. The state does have a 3-year inspection or pump your system out, so your typical septic tank. And I know some people don't like it. I got a card from the county. I have to do this. There's an expense. But you can sort of think of it as an annual checkup with your doctor.
I would think of it as an investment.
It is, too. But, even when you have to go visit your doctor and you get an annual checkup and the doctor says, hey, you're fine, you don't get mad at them and say, well, I just wasted a bunch of money today. You're like, great. Like you said, it's an investment. I had it looked at. I had it pumped out.
Or preventative medicine, if you would.
Or your oil change in your car. I had a preventative thing that was done. I had a sort of a clean bill of health. Mm-hmm. And now I can rest a little bit assured. But there's other things, to do's and don't do's. And, you don't want to put, strong chemicals and stuff. Like don't flush paint thinner or paint itself down the drain. Don't put things that would be detrimental. It's a biological system. You don't want to put things down the drain that are going to hurt it, but basically stuff that comes out of your body, toilet paper, things like that, that's
biodegradable.
That's what systems are meant to handle. Correct.
So, as a biological system, could you give us the basics of how it operates or should operate ideally?
Yeah. The waste that comes out of your house, whether it's laundry waste or toilet waste or kitchen sink waste, things like that, or showers, anything that comes out of your home. Enters typically a septic tank. And a septic tank, it does the primary breakdown of different solids and also settles out things. So, for instance, you're out gardening, you have a bunch of soil on your clothes. That's not going to break down, but that soil will settle out and form in the bottom of that tank. And then a clearer zone will leave that tank and then go out to some kind of usually soil-based treatment, whether it's a mound system that's above grade or an in-ground system. It's going to go to some kind of soil-based and then do its final clarification. You'll get more pathogen die-off, you'll get rid of some microorganisms, things like that, attenuate some nutrients, different things that we don't want entering our groundwater. And then after a while, it'll be considered treated or clean, and then it will actually enter back into the groundwater and hold that whole groundwater cycle, and so we're recycling. So the nice thing is you think of it, it's really the ultimate green machine or green technology is we're using water. The people out in the country, they have a well, they pull out of the aquifer, they use it, we treat it, we return it back to the aquifer, where other places, most cities in Wisconsin, we're pulling the water out of a well, we're flushing it down the big pipe, it goes to a river, eventually, down the Mississippi.
Right, never this to be way, used again. Or
right, we're returning
at least
it back.
Downriver.
But that's the basics of it, is you have a primary treatment in a septic tank, and then you have a secondary treatment in the soil, some kind of soil-based system.
Do you get to decide what kind of septic system you get, or how do you decide you know, what septic system you're going to have built?
Well, it's all based off, you know, so if you're looking at replacing or building new, the first step in determining, you know, what you're getting for a septic is you'd hire a soil tester, certified soil tester.
Okay.
So they would come out and they evaluate the soil. They look at it and have different characteristics, you know, not only physical characteristics like the texture, whether it's sandy or clay, that's going to tell you how big of a system you're going to get, because obviously we can move water faster through sand than we can through a clay. But also there's indicators in the soil that tell us at some time the soil is wet. And we want to have a separation distance above that, so we make sure we have a good treatment zone. Otherwise, if we're discharging wastewater into a zone of saturation, then it's sort of like an amusement park slide. Any of the pathogen, viruses, nutrients, we're putting it in there. They don't get enough attenuation time to the soil. They can go right through and then end up in the groundwater. So based on that, the soil tester tells us with his soil test what kind of system you're going to get. If you got a lot of suitable soil, you might be able to get by with a conventional. If we don't have enough, we have to artificially bring in that separation distance that's required. So they would bring in some sand, and that's how you would end up with a mound.
Oh.
So either way, they still function the same. We still take it out there. We have a certain amount of separation we need for treatment. It's just, can nature provide it all to us, or do we have to make some up artificially? Or if the site's really bad and there's nothing we can really do, or we have permeability issue, we can't get it into the ground, then the last case resort would be a holding tank where don't do a soil based.
Right?
It just goes into a tank. When it's full, you have to pump it.
So we don't get to decide the septic system.
Nature
pretty
does.
Much. Yes.
Yeah. I don't decide. Nature tells me or tells the soil tester, it says, these are the conditions that we have. Mm-hmm. And then what we try to do is we try to engineer or design a system that works with nature to get the treatment, but still assure the protections for human health and welfare to make sure that we still meet that separation distance.
What about the size of the system, Matt?
The size of the system, again, it's related to that soil test, or a lot of people still use the old word perk test. We don't do perk tests anymore.
Soil test makes better sense to me.
But
I understand
the soil
that.
Test, because we actually look at the characteristics. The old perk tests were basically you poured water in a hole, see how fast it goes away. It tells us how fast water goes away, but it doesn't tell us whether we're getting treatment or not.
Yes.
So by looking at these characteristics, we can determine and what kind of treatment we're going to get. So based on the soil type, again, if we have a sandy soil, we can maybe get a smaller footprint because we can move water through the soil faster. But if it's a heavy clay site, we're going to need a bigger system because we're going to have to spread it out more because we can't get water to go through. So a similar way to think about it is if you want to water your lawn.
Yeah.
I don't take the garden hose and just throw it out on the lawn and turn it on and say, well, I'm watering the lawn. You're going to have a big puddle. You want to spread that out so you use some kind of,
a nice sprinkler system.
Yeah, lawn sprinkler, you know, whatever kind you want. You try to spread it out or sprinkle it onto the lawn to spread it out, not leave a puddle. So it's the same concept. If it's a heavier soil, we're going to have to spread it out more to make sure that we can get it infiltrate without it ponding or leaking out or you're having issues that way.
You've been doing this since 2000. So
I've been at this job since 2000, yes.
Yeah, it's a quarter century of working with...
Thanks for making me feel old.
Wastewater specialist. Yes. But I mean, so, and you talked about the perk test and now it's the soil test. How has this science of septic changed in your time here?
Well, it's changed some. In the greater scheme of things, soils and wastewater have been around a long time. It's not a real difficult concept, but, some things have changed. And the biggest thing that I see that has changed, in my time here is there's some newer technology.
Mm-hmm.
And it's getting to the point where we like to sort of talk internally some and with the public. We say a lot of the good sites are being used. So when people are looking at these home lots, I mean, having a nice, well, permeable soil, a lot of area to build on, we're starting to have fewer and fewer of those sites show up, or we're seeing a site that's a small lake lot and now we're on the third system and, we're running out of room, or we're having to put it on top of old systems and we're having to engineer or try to devise something new to do with these sites. And so we've seen, some push that way just to come up with, we have to think outside the box a little bit more to come up with some, how are we going to accommodate this? And then also some newer technologies. We've gotten more into, because you don't have a lot of land, some like pre-treatment systems, like aerobic treatment units and other things that will treat the wastewater ahead of time so we don't have to rely on the soil to provide as much treatment. The drawback to that is, soil and land is usually cheaper than a mechanical device and upkeep and maintenance on that. But in some cases,
that might not be the case.
That's the only opportunity we have to get a system that can function on either the soil parameters or the physical limitations of that site for us.
So these septic systems, they are not eternal. They have a lifespan.
They have a lifespan.
And what is there a typical lifespan for septic systems?
I like to think that typically, if you have a well-maintained system and you're not abusing it or, you know, dumping paint thinner and stuff down your drain, you should expect 25, 30 years life out of a system. Now, I say expect that.
Right.
You should get more. But it's like buying a car. How many miles do you think you're going to get out of a car? How many miles do you think you're going to get out of a new roof that you just put on your house? Expect that, but certain things may decrease it. And I like to say that nobody is average. That's sort of an average lifespan. Nobody can be average. I know my analogy is, I forget what it was. There's something like 2.3 children is the average household size. You either have two or you have three. You can't have a 0.3. So just like this, nobody can be average, but we all fall within a range. But what's unique with your home, obviously, if you have less people in the home, your system should last longer. It's like a car. If you drive less miles, it should last longer. If you drive a lot of miles, your car is probably not going to last as long. So if you have six people in a three-bedroom home, it's going to be working that system hard. If you have two people in a three-bedroom home, it's probably going to last longer. But then again, with maintenance, what you personally do in your home, number of showers taken, if you have a lot of adolescent children that love to, you know, go to sports and go out for dates and are taking three, four showers a day, you're using that system hard. So it depends on what your use is, characteristics of the site. There's a lot of different factors, but typically, I say you should expect 25, 30 years out of a system.
And you mentioned before, when a new septic system goes in, the old system doesn't necessarily come out, does it?
Not necessarily. I mean, if you run out of space and you have to remove it and use that area, I mean, obviously we'd be removing it. Otherwise, the systems are usually just abandoned. So they just basically cut off that pipe and it just stays in the ground or just nothing hurting. It'll just degrade on its own and just stay there. We've also had some systems, depending on the reason it failed, if it was just like a biologic accumulation in there, what they call a biomat buildup, and it just, water can't move through it because it builds up. Sometimes those systems, as long as it meets all the other rules and it's not discharging the groundwater or something like that, you can sometimes leave those old systems there, put a diverter valve in and say, okay, we're putting a new system in, but then maybe every couple years I'll switch back to the old system and use that a little bit, and then you've got now two systems you can maybe use.
Sure.
But that, it's only in particular cases where it's a biological buildup in there. If it was an old system that's installed in a groundwater, obviously we're not going to say, well, just go ahead and switch back to that old system discharging the groundwater. But depending on how it is, sometimes those older systems can be left alone. And over time, when that breaks down, it'll be a functioning system again, maybe in 5-10 years. And now you've got two systems that you can switch back and forth. And then hopefully indefinitely, you'll never need another one. But
Matt Jensen, our guest, wastewater specialist with the Wisconsin Department of Safety and Professional Services, taking a look at your septic system today and hopefully staving off the worst. If you have a question or a story to share, good, bad, or otherwise, you're welcome to join us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's go to Bernie in Door County. Bernie, hi.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call today.
Yeah. What can we do for you?
Well, I'm a master plumber up here, and I do 3-year septic inspections for people. And I know a hot topic right now is short-term rentals. And I would like the guest to explain if there are risks. I think there are, but his side of it. For a house that was, you know, a three-bedroom house with a septic system, and then it's put into short-term rental use, and they advertise it as it'll hold 12 people. And this is happening everywhere, not just Door County. But what are the ramifications? I know that it's hard on the septic system, but let's hear it from the state.
Well, it's a difficult subject for us at the state as a regulatory, because we don't regulate short-term rentals. That's a different department. So
you're talking like
Airbnbs, VRBOs. Yeah, yeah, we're not supposed to use those words. So we call them short-term rentals. That's our generic catchphrase.
But those are the typical rentals.
Correct.
And Bernie makes a good case that there are these small places, these cabins, basically, that'll fit as many people as they can in for a weekend.
Right. So from our end, our code is an environmental protection / human health code. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that we're not polluting the groundwater, causing, you know, illnesses to people. We also want to make sure that we're protecting the environment. We're not causing anything out there. So I guess a way that you could think of it is if you overload your system, you have too many people in there or you're overloading it, what's going to happen? It's akin to driving a car a lot of miles, putting 40,000 miles on a car in a year. All you're doing is you're going to shorten that life. So once that biomat forms, it's going to cause a premature failure. Premature meaning you're not going to get your 25, 30 years of life out of the system. So when it fails, then we're going to say, now you have a problem, now you have to fix it. So it's sort of the owner of that short-term rental is basically using up the life of their system in short order. They're overusing it. They're going to cause a failure. Once that failure happens, county's going to issue orders. They're going to have to replace it. So that's sort of the, I guess, one way that they're caught. But really, these need to be regulated through a zoning or the people that regulate the short-term rentals. Because from our end, let's say you have a cabin, we'll pick on Door County. So you have a cabin up there. I have no idea, you know, it's listed as a residence. Mm-hmm. So I have no idea whether that is owner-occupied, if you rent it out by the month or the year, or if you're renting it out for the weekend as a short-term rental. I have no idea. I'm not knocking on your door every day saying, hey, how are you using this home?
This is not what the Department of Safety and Professional Services in Wisconsin
right.
is doing.
We look at when they're sited, you know, what is it? It's a residence, and we have siting requirements for that or sizing requirements for a residence. So if somebody's taking, let's say, a three-bedroom home that's estimated to have two people per bedroom, six people, and they're renting it out to 12 every week, they're going to be overusing that system, which will shorten the life of the system, cause an early failure. So from our end, it's just going to fail sooner, and then they'll have to replace it. So instead of getting 30 years, maybe they only get 5 out of it. So that's the problem. But we've looked at it now where we've put some guidance in there to say if you're licensed as a short-term rental somebody, that, you know, whether the county or another state agency, that we do have sizing guidance in there now to say if you're sizing for 12 people, you should size it similar to a six-bedroom home to accommodate for that sizing. But we don't control what your use is. We just, you tell us, and then we will try to tell you what you need to do to get a system to work. If somebody has it licensed out there as a short-term rental, which many counties now are licensing that. Otherwise, I have no idea knowing whether your home or your residence is being rented out day, month, week, year, or owner-occupied. I have no idea. I just see it as a residence. We size it. So I hope that answers the question a little bit, that, you know, we're trying to provide that tool out there.
Yeah, and this may be more regulatory for Door County than Wisconsin Department of Safety and Professional Services. But Bernie, I take your point, and thank you for your call. If your septic system is set up for, you know, three people in a small cabin, and you are regularly getting more than that through short-term rentals, that maybe the three-year maintenance schedule needs to be sped up a little bit, or considerably.
Right. There's possibly a maintenance needs to be done or resize it, because now it can't handle the amount of gallons of wastewater that we're putting through it. So, I mean, it is an issue, but again, for us to know, because we don't regulate short-term rentals, I have no idea knowing what these people are doing. But it's probably going to be better done through zoning or other licensing of the short-term rentals, saying if you're going to do that and you have a three-bedroom home, you can't advertise you have 12 or 20 people staying there. You have to sort of stay in your lane. Stay in your lane.
Yeah, sometimes they tell you they're bringing three, and it ends up bringing, you know, a bunch more than that.
I'm not knocking on the door to see how many people are living in your home. If it's sized for three-bedroom and six and you have seven people, I'm not knocking on doors looking.
But if you were the property owner, it would be probably in your best interest as an upfront investment and preventative medicine to make sure you're maintaining that as though you have a lot
more. And you have it sized correctly, too.
Yes. Bernie, thank you for the call. Let's go to Jim in Verona next. Hi, Jim.
Hey, how are you?
Great, thank you.
I got a couple questions. You know, how laundry soap and dishwasher soap, how does that affect a septic system?
Well, laundry soap and dishwashers, dishwashing soap, it doesn't really affect the system I mean, there are can be some things out there that may be a little bit more detrimental than others, but typically when you're looking at the volumes that are being used, unless you're using a whole bottle of dishwashing liquid at every sink of dishes, you're most likely not going to cause a problem. There are some that are better than others. You know, there's some listed as septic safe, others that are not. I've cautioned some folks, we did have a few problems, you know, during the COVID outbreak where we had people that everything was antibacterial, a lot of bleach being used. And if you remember that these are biological systems.
Right.
So if you're killing off bacteria in your home or on your hands, you're also killing off your septic system. So, but it, typically then again, if you're using some hand sanitizers, a little bit bleach here and there, not an issue because it's dilution. But when you tack on antibacterial this, antibacterial that, a lot of bleach, and you take it to an extreme, we did have a few cases where the systems were being impacted because of that. But typically, your average, you know, home soap use, whether it's detergents or dishwashing liquid, not really a problem. We have had some issues with some of the powder detergents because they have mineral binders in them, and that's not biological, not decomposed. But then again, if you're doing your periodic maintenance on your system and having it pumped out and removing those solids, it shouldn't be a problem. But again, typically when I see problems with systems, it's usually not, aha, you used the wrong detergent. It's you have, you know, whatever, seven people in a three-bedroom home.
Yeah.
You have parties every weekend because you have all extra, you know, load. You're using maybe detergent that's not the best. You're
quantity also, seems to be the more bigger concern.
A lot of,
as
a lot of
to
extra
the
water.
Quality,
but
of
it's
what
usually
you're in there.
Multiple things. It's the straw that broke the camel's back. It's not this one thing did it. It's usually you did five things, and all five now sort of tip the scale into the systems now having stress.
Jim, you had another question for us?
Yeah, how about that Riddick? Should a person be putting flushing that down the toilet? It's for septic system. I think it's called Riddick.
Okay, there's a couple different groups of products out there. One would be like a Riddick, which is more geared towards root removal. And if you have root intrusion into your piping, you have basically a breach of that piping, which, you know, obviously isn't good. The piping should be fixed. So if you have root intrusion, you know, you can put something down there that will kill off the roots. The problem is we still have a breach of that pipe. In addition, unless that tree or whatever that plant is that has the roots entering your
sounds
system,
like a Band-Aid on a gunshot wound.
It's going to keep coming back. You're just maybe, you know, like pruning something back, but it's still going to keep coming at you.
Yeah.
So you really need to fix the root cause. So from that end, there's some things you can do to sort of, like I said, Band-Aid it along, but it really doesn't fix, excuse the pun here, the root of the problem. So you have that. And then the other avenue would be if there's a group of products that you flush down your system to make your septic tank, quote, work better. You can't see it. I'm doing air quotes here on the airwaves. But
which makes me highly doubtful now.
Yeah. So when you have a system work better, it's a biologic system. Anything from our body or the drains that goes down there, the bacteria there will respond to it. Their population will increase based on the food load that we supply to it. If there's less food or less load that goes in there, they will back off. You don't need to really add anything to make the system work better. It works fine on its own with proper maintenance and proper care. It'll do its own thing. We don't need to sweeten the pot, so to speak, or add anything to them.
How do you know if you have a leak in your septic system? And Jim, thank you for the call. And Michael, I know that was one part of your email question. We'll get to the rest of that after the break. But before we got to go, I got a minute here. How would I be able to tell if there is a leak somewhere in my septic through like roots or?
Well, you're not always going to know if you have an intrusion or something like that. But that's part of the maintenance. When they come, they pump out your tank. If they see root intrusion or can see where water had been leaking down through like the riser,
yeah,
you know, what you see outside or above your tank, they might be able to identify and see it and say, hey, I can see there's something coming in here. Other things that you may have intrusion is when they pump your tank out. If you still have water running into your tank, but you're not running water in the house, it's coming. That means you have a leak somewhere and you possibly have groundwater or soil water intrusion into that system.
So really it's maintenance that's going to find that leak.
Maintenance is
going to
find it. Yep. Or, you know, you see a wet spot in your yard or something like that, and then it's like,
well, that's obvious then. I was wondering if it's not so obvious.
Why is the grass greener over my septic? Well, it's there for a reason. Yeah.
Matthew Jensen, our guest, private on-site wastewater treatment systems plan reviewer. He's been doing it since 2000 for the Wisconsin Department of Safety and Professional Services. And we invite you to our conversation with your septic system questions or stories today at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. 1234 or send us an email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you're listening to WPR News. Who knew talking septic could be so much fun with our guest, Matthew Jansen, private on-site wastewater treatment systems plan reviewer. With our Wisconsin Department of Safety and Professional Services, I'm Lee Rayburn. And if you've got a question for our expert, he can help with your answer at 1-800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org. And let's go to Christina in Glenwood City next. Hi, Christina.
Hello, thank you. Well, I moved to Wisconsin 30 years ago from a suburb of Chicago, so had no septic experience. So I went to the courthouse and I read a booklet about how to manage your septic. This is what I learned, and I'm wondering if it's all true. Don't do several loads of laundry at once. Never pour grease down your sink. Don't use a garbage disposal, and have a lint trap on your laundry pipe. Is that all true?
Yes, 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 and yes.
Oh!
So there.
Wow.
Now 4 for 4.
So don't do a ton of laundry at once.
Well, and I'll break these down.
Yeah.
So if you do a lot of laundry or a lot of water use, again, it's sort of like the analogy with the garden hose out in the yard.
Mm-hmm.
If you're putting a lot of water out there at once, so for instance, end of the season, I just emptied my backyard swimming pool. So how do you want to empty it? Do you just sort of pull the valve and just release 5,000 gallons at once?
I've seen that video. It's
well,
gone viral.
I know, they're fun, but you're overloading it. So it's better to, you know, not wait till Saturday and do 10 loads of laundry on Saturday. Do a load a day, space it out so you're not sending a large slug of water out there. Because what happens, you're hydraulically driving that water and the pathogens and the nutrients through that soil-based system. You're not giving it time to do the treatment. You're forcing it through. So, yeah, that's correct. Pouring grease down a drain. Grease is notoriously hard to decompose. It takes about 8 to 10 times more effort for the biological function to break down fats, oils, and grease than it does other contaminants, the biological contaminants. Mm-hmm. So it really taxes your system. So it's better to, you know, take that oil, pour it in a coffee can,
yep,
throw it out, wipe the grease out of the bacon grease out of, you know,
even
let it,
a municipal system, I don't
exactly
think
it makes them work
drop
hard.
The grease.
Also, you could have problems with that, you know, plugging pipes and
yep,
other stuff before you even get to the septic. So fat, soil, grease, it's better just to try to take that out of the system, not work it hard. Garbage disposals are notoriously hard because if you take your whatever, I made a soup or something, and I got carrots or potatoes or mm-hmm, whatever, instead of grinding it up and sending it down to your system, making your system decompose that, just put it in the garbage or compost it, do something else with it. Why make your system work harder? It doesn't need to. You know, it's like taking a car and revving it in the driveway for no reason. You don't need to. It's working it harder. And a lint trap, it's just a good choice. Lint, especially nowadays, we're not talking about lint such as cottons that may break down.
Well,
we're talking polyesters, nylons.
We're talking about microplastics.
Microplastics, other things that don't break down, and now your system's going to have to work harder to hopefully retain that in the septic tank or the filter in your septic tank, catch it. Otherwise, if that goes out to your drain field, you can plug your drain field with non-organic material and cause premature failure because of that. We don't see it often. Typically, where I see things like that escape would be you know, more of like a dog kennel or something with a lot of hair, or a beauty salon or something with
sure,
that hair that's similar to a lot of fibers going down, plugging up systems. But lint traps, that helps too. If you have a lot of pets in the home, you know,
yeah,
cat hair or something like that, or dog hair, again, those lint traps are going to help catch that so it's not going out to your drain field and plugging that.
Christina, you get an A+ for the day. You're 4 for 4. That's
give
pretty,
you a sticker and a gold star, and you can hang that on your fridge.
Thank you for calling. Jim in Middleton, you're next. Jim, hi.
Hey, how are you?
Great, thank you. What? How can Matt help you today?
Well, I just wanted to comment. 20 years ago, I guess now, I had a septic field that was no longer perking. It was starting to fail. And to put in a second field would have been extremely expensive because it would have had to been pumped up to the front yard, trees taken out, concrete cut. So we put in an aeration unit. And it seems like a lot of people don't know about that as an option. And it took about 2 years for the now anaerobic system instead of anaerobic septic system to clean up my field. And since then, it's been dry as a bone. And my understanding is the water that leaves the septic field or the aeration tank is very clean. There's very little material left in it to be digested, if you will. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, that's correct. The aerobic treatment units, the way you think of it is if you build a campfire, it's going to burn at a certain rate. And you can sort of think of it as anaerobic. They're a slower bacteria. They don't operate as efficiently. But if you fan that fire and add oxygen to it, you're going to, you know, fan the flames and make a bigger fire. Sort of you can think of that sort of the same analogy is that by putting an aerobic treatment unit in, injecting air into a system, getting that biology going at a faster rate, it's going to break down the material, quote, better. But what it does is it breaks it down there. And then, as you said, the clear water that goes out to your drain field is already sort of, well, it's pre-treated. It's pre-cleaned, which makes your drain field work much better because it doesn't have to work as hard. So the biomat or whatever is already out there is going to slowly sort of get broke down through nature. And that's sort of what happened in your case is by putting that aerobic treatment out there, you clean it up. I don't have to work the drain field as hard. The drain field can sort of come back to life a little bit. So that in some cases is an option, depending, again, whether your drain field meets its separation distance to groundwater or bedrock. But in certain cases, yeah, that could be an option or could be a potential relief for those systems that are they're aged.
Jim, thanks for putting another option on the table, and thank you for the call. Mark and Stevens Point, you're next. Hi, Mark.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have another question about septic systems. About 9 years ago, we built our house, and the drain field was put in with some type of plastic chambers. And I don't know the technical term for it, but they're a series of chambers. And my understanding is they've kind of gone away from that now. And if that is the case, should I change anything maintenance-wise, because I understand they're not functioning quite as well?
Well, they are an approved product in the state of Wisconsin. There's some anecdotal, you always get some different people that say, I don't like this product or I like this product. Overall, I haven't seen that there's a large segment of those failing out there that is a problem with them. It's just sort of the ebb and tide of what people prefer to do. They were very popular for a while because if you've ever had to shovel gravel or river rock, it's really hard to do. And the chambers came by because you could dig a trench, you could put the chambers in, snap together. You think of a sort of like a half a culvert. So it's like half a culvert put in there, these chambers, and it's just a place for the effluent to go and then seep into the soil. So it's just a different way of doing a system. And so the product is more expensive, but it was easier for installation. Some people liked them. There were a few issues early on with it. The products have been redesigned for the most part. Haven't seen that issue. People's, different tastes, I guess, for the installers, they tend to ebb and flow to one product or another. They're still out there. They're still being put in throughout, not only the state, but also the country. They were basically invented in other parts of the country where they did not have as good of access to all the glacial materials we have, a bunch of rock, a bunch of sand. And so they didn't have those products. They had to come up with a synthetic alternative. So there's that. There's another class of system that basically use like artificial rock that's like an extruded polystyrene to replace gravel. So there's a couple different products out there. You don't have to do anything different with them. They're functioning. They'll work fine. They will, last and operate just like any other system. So there's nothing that you'd have to do on maintenance, and I wouldn't worry about it until the time comes to replace them, and that's going to be no different than any other system.
Hopes that puts your mind at ease, Mark, and thank you for the call. Matt Jensen is our guest. He's a wastewater specialist with the Wisconsin Department of Safety and Professional Services. And Matt, I've got a bunch of emails here, so let's see how many we can get to. So I'll start with Jeff, who emailed to say he has a property, hold on, property with a septic system and a mound some distance away. A road project will reroute the driveway. One option will have the new driveway go over the connection between the septic tank and the mound. Should Jeff be concerned about this, or would it be no big deal? If he goes ahead with this option, what should he make sure is addressed? Is there a strong reason not to do this?
Well, the biggest things that you're going to have to look at is how far below is it? And
how far below does it need to be?
Well, it depends. If you're from the septic tank to the mound itself, we really don't have a restriction for driveways or roads or things like okay. that. But you obviously, just some common sense. If you're only 6 inches below the driveway, you're going to have some compaction. You're going to run the risk of breaking that pipe. The deeper it is, the better the safety factor. And then we have this other thing in Wisconsin. It's called winter, and stuff likes to freeze.
I've heard of this.
And, yeah, you've heard of this. It comes around about once a year. But the other issue that we have is that now you're going to have a driveway with snow being cleared. So when you're doing that, the insulation property of that snow is gone, and we're going to drive that frost down farther. Ooh. So if you have a shallow pipe that's out there, you can drive frost down. And some years, beyond our control, frost may go down very deep anyway, but it's a safety factor. So what you may want to do is you may want to say, before you do that, let's dig up that old sewer pipe. Let's put some frost protection out there, some insulation out there, extruded polystyrene, or there's some pipe that has insulation already built into it, or take a look at some cover. And you'd contact basically a plumber or a designer.
So it can be done, but it needs to be done.
But those are some things that, we really don't have anything in the code that says that, but just some common sense to
save yourself.
I'm putting a driveway a foot right above my pipe and I'm clearing the snow off. You're going to find all of a sudden, why is my tank backing up or toilet backing up?
Because you're gonna pay for
your
it.
Mound is a big ice cube and the pipe is an ice cube and you can't get it out there. So that would be the biggest concern I would have is, taking a look at that and then getting some estimates on, should we be insulating this or doing some kind of frost protection?
Yeah, you can do it, Jeff. Just do it very carefully. Doreen emailed to say she has a cottage in northern Wisconsin, used only a few weekends during the winter for ice fishing. A plumber once told Doreen that to keep the enzymes active over the winter, she could drop fish entrails directly into the tank to keep the bacteria working throughout the winter. Thoughts, Matt?
I'll have to write that one down. That's a good one. I've heard some different things, but basically what's going to happen in the winter is your system's going to go dormant. If you're not using it, not putting
and
anything
in there.
Is that
okay? There,
it is, because, the biology is still there. It's just going to be it's very dormant in the winter anyway. Mm-hmm. Bacteria like us, they don't want to operate below about 40 degrees. Tanks are struggling to sort of maintain that in the wintertime. And if you're not providing warm water or anything into the tank, it's going to be, difficult for them in that environment. So when you come out there and you do have use, the bigger thing that I would say is not so much whether your tank is working or not. The biggest thing I would be worried about would be freeze-ups again.
Yeah.
Because if you're not using that tank, everything goes dormant. The biological temperatures go down because they assume room temperature. But for them, if it's minus 10 outside, that's what they're going to assume. And then you come out there for the weekend or a week and you do ice fishing or snowmobiling. Now you're adding a bunch of waste into that system and the system is sort of dormant. It's going to take a while to get going. Or now waste hits that cold pipe, cold tank. You might get a freeze up. You might get something that's going to happen out there and cause a problem. Mm. To play it safe, the safer thing would be maybe pump your tank out before in the fall, before winter gets here. If you're only up there a few times and not a lot, you're probably not even going to fill your tank if you're just up there a little bit.
Why would somebody tell Doreen fish entrails?
There's lots of good stories about things to put down.
Are they wives' tales, though? Or?
Well, I don't know whose wives these are, but I hear some tales of different things to put down your system. So, yeah, that will add some biology, and you're going to get some decomposition out there.
Okay.
But in the greater scheme of things, unless you're out there, it'd make more sense for you to go up there and just use the system.
Yeah.
You don't need to put fish entrails, or I've heard dog food or a dead chicken to, I've heard lots of different things to put in your system to either get it started or to keep it maintained. You don't need to do that. Just using the system will. In this instance, the problem is winter in between those uses. Mm-hmm. Is probably going to be more of a hardship for us not having the system keep maintaining. Because if we're going to do something like that, you're better off just to go up there and use the system, But then again, you're traveling up there, what, just to use the toilet or do a load of laundry or take a shower once a week? It's really not practical.
So try the chicken, Doreen. Just kidding.
Let us know how it works.
Mark in LaPointe, you're next. Hi, Mark.
Hi. I have a question on gray water systems. We live in an area where holding tanks are the norm. And quite frankly, a lot of people discharge their tubs and showers and sometimes even their sinks outside to avoid the holding tank pump out charges. So I was just curious if you knew anything about gray water systems or if that might be an alternative to try to get people to comply with some laws and ordinances rather than dumping pretty clean water into a holding tank that has to be picked up in a truck and just pumped and put elsewhere, and it costs a lot of money. So that's my general question.
Yeah, you're up in Madeline Island, right?
You bet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the question is what exactly is gray water? So our code doesn't differentiate between gray water or black water. Hmm. And you would think that, well, I could see what black water or what's in the toilet, and that's pretty nasty. But what is the gray water that we're generating? And you think about things such as gray water as laundry. And I know it's common that, you know, people say, don't put that in your septic. I just put that out on the yard. But when you think about it, your gray water, you know, we're talking about, again, you know, human health protection, not only getting rid of nutrients that are out there, but human health protection and viruses, pathogens, things like that. So when you do your laundry, what are you doing? You're washing clothing. What does your clothing do during the day? It's in contact with your body. And what kind of pathogens, viruses, bacteria is on your body? A lot. Mm-hmm. And so there's actually been some research that as far as that goes, you know, maybe not their organic loading, but as far as pathogens, viruses, and things like that, it's almost as high, if not higher, than what you'd encounter in the black water, which is sort of counterintuitive
to us.
So when you think about that, you say, well, the water looks clean, but I wouldn't want to drink anybody's laundry water either. And so there are contaminants in there. It does have to be handled. It's treated the same legally as black water. And so you would have to do something with it treated. Okay. So if you're in an area where only a holding tank is suitable, I mean, the law does allow for you to split and say, I have a holding tank or I have a black water system and I have a gray water system. But it doesn't make sense to make two mounds, one to treat black water, one to treat gray water. I just put it all together and treat it. So if you have a site that's not conducive to a soil-based system, you can only do a holding tank, there's really not an option for you to do a gray water discharge because, again, in the eyes of the law, the contaminants, the viruses, pathogens, things like that are just as bad in the gray water as they are in the black water. So, yeah, there's opportunities to split them, but in this case, if you're only good for a holding tank, you're probably not going to be able to do anything with the gray water, and it should go into your tank just for those reasons, as we don't want to contaminate the groundwater or surface water with things that could be harmful to the public health.
Mark, great question. Matt, great answer. Michael emailed to say he has a new house with a new septic system. It is an at-grade system with a 110-foot drain field. What, if anything, should Michael do to keep the system healthy in the first year? Is there anything he should look out for that may be a warning sign that something would be wrong?
Well, for the first year, depending on how long ago you have it put in, the biggest detriment, again, is that nasty, we'll call it a four-letter word that isn't, but winter. It comes around and it freezes things up. So the biggest issue with new systems for the new year is making sure, especially for like mounds or at-grades, mm-hmm. making sure we get some kind of vegetative cover on them and we get some insulation. Because if we don't have that, we could have frost that could work its way down into that system and freeze it up. And once a system is frozen, I know people have been hired to, like, you know, steam jet out. The problem is if it's still minus 10 degrees, I cleared it out today and tomorrow it's going to freeze right back up again. If the system's out in the freezer, it's going to freeze up. So making sure that you get some kind of grass established on that. I recommend for a lot of people, you know, this time of year, stop mowing your mound system, let the grass get a little bit thick on it. So it traps snow and we get
That's a great idea.
We get some better snow cover, we get better insulation and, you know, just try to get some insulation out there. If you don't have a lot of grass, I've seen some people have gone out there with like some straw and put a sort of a thicker thatch down just to help try to insulate it. But the biggest thing that's going to get your system operational and get that warmth in it is just using it. The daily use, you're going to have warm water that's going to go into that system. It's going to keep it going But that would be the biggest thing for above ground systems. You know, make sure that there's some kind of insulating cover on them. Get some grass established or put some straw or something down to get it through that first winter. And then any kind of signs that you might have a problem would be obvious if you have any kind of leakage or something like that. Also, above ground systems, animals tend to love them because it's nice loose dirt to dig in. So be on the lookout for, you know, chipmunks or ground squirrels or anybody that's trying to make a new home in your new system.
Yeah.
But those are just some things to look out for, but otherwise just use it. It will take care of itself.
Dan emailed to ask about septic friendly toilet paper and the best method for maintaining systems for cabins that may not be used much. That's come up again. Dan usually does extra flushing at the cabin to keep fluids moving through a low use system. And finally, the state requirement is for inspection and not pumping. So Dan's system sometimes is inspected without need of pumping.
That's correct. The three-year maintenance event is the counties will usually send out a card and say, hey, we need to have somebody take a look at your tank to see if it needs either pump it out or see if it needs to be pumped out. And that's to make sure we remove the solids. The way the tanks are designed is that over time, again, we talked about accumulating solids, mm-hmm. and then over time, the tanks will fill up with solids where we don't have that operational zone. So when you do a load of laundry, if we don't have a lot of clear zone in there, and you do like the 10 loads of laundry that we said on Saturday morning, you're going to stir up that sediment and possibly send it out to your drain field and plug it.
Mm.
So that's why we want to have that maintenance done. But the code also allows for an inspection. So you can hire somebody to come out there and say, I looked at it. It doesn't need to be pumped. It's good to go. They can sign off on it saying we don't need to have it pumped today. We can just, you know, do the inspection. So there's sort of two camps. Some people say, well, just pump it anyway. You can do that. It doesn't hurt. It's like doing an oil change every week on your car. Probably not necessary, but you can. But then on the other hand, we don't want people saying, I drove 50,000 miles and the mechanic said, I don't need an oil change. It's good to go.
And
we
then
don't
you throw a rod.
We don't want that the other way too. So, I mean, there's good and bad about it. I mean, if especially on low use systems,
yep.
like a cabin or something like that, where you're not getting a lot of use, you know, yeah, I wouldn't worry about pumping it that often because you know you have a low use as opposed to a home with six people in it
right.
that's being used a lot. Probably should just pump it, or you can surmise, I'm probably going to need a pump, not inspected because I have a regular, you know, use.
What about TP?
Toilet paper, for the most part, I haven't seen an issue. There's a lot of brands that say septic safe or not septic safe. I think for the most part, most brands are. The biggest issues that we see are the other things that people say, quote, are septic safe that are not. And, uh-huh. and that typically revolves around, as I like to say it, other human artifacts is, you know, things like flush bowl wipes, you know, hygienic products,
yep.
things like that, cigarette butts. You don't flush things down the drain that should not be down there. So those are the kind of things, you know, toilet paper for the most part.
So those wet wipes, not to go down the
Even though they
septic.
Say they're flushable.
Feminine hygiene products don't go down the septic.
Yeah, they go down and they go into your tank and plug
and
stuff up and cause
filters.
Other problems. Yeah, the filters hang around, they cause problems. So things like that are what cause a problem. The toilet paper, I haven't really seen any brand that has really, quote, caused
okay.
an issue.
Matt, I've got about a minute left here, but Dan emailed to ask about water softener regeneration brine and whether that's good or bad for a septic system. I think we talked about this
bad.
A little bit last.
Yeah.
Bad.
Yeah. Get it out of the system. The newer ones are better than the older ones. There's less salt on the recharge.
Okay.
But again, the salt is not an environment that bacteria want to live in. It's going to cause them stress. And it's not going to, you know, people say that it's not going to hurt your system. Well, it's not going to help your system either. So if you can get that out of your system, do not put that into your septic system.
Easy enough. So next week is Septic Smart Week, according to our
yep.
EPA, which is, I believe, your big holiday.
Yeah, it's a big holiday. I'm throwing a party. We're having snacks. It's Septic Smart Week. It's something done by the EPA just to draw attention to septic systems, some do's and don'ts on what to do. If you're interested, you can look up Septic Smart Week in EPA. We also have some literature on our department website, dsps.wi.gov.
We put a link up to your specific
okay,
section
good.
Of that for those that want more information. There is a lot of documentation there, wpr.org/Lee, and just look for Matthew Jansen's show today on that section of the webpage, and that will link right to the private on-site wastewater treatment system plan reviewer for the Wisconsin Department of Safety and Professional Services. It's all on there. And Matt, Happy Septic Smart Week.
Oh, thank you.
I'm looking forward to having
you
back.
I'm waiting for my present and the card.
We did not get to all the questions just like last year, so we're going to have you back again. Thanks to all the callers, everybody who emailed. Thanks for being a part of the show. And thanks to our team as well. Jeff Robbins, Clara Neipert, Joel Patnod, our executive producer, Jill Nadeau. I'm Lee Rayburn, and you are listening to WPR News.